Welcome, one and all, to Professional Conversationalist, the podcast. The space where we explore the wonder, humour and craziness in conversations and situations in that rarefied atmosphere we call the workplace. The podcast that helps you make sense of working with other humans, including you. The podcast that helps you make sense of work.
In this episode, we will cover at what is feedback and why collaborative feedback. Because we're going to talk about this thing called collaborative feedback. We're going to touch upon what is feedback. In fact, we're going to go back to basics and say what is feedback, and we can say what is collaborative feedback. Why are we talking about collaborative? What is collaboration? We're going to talk about what's the history of feedback. What do people think and feel about feedback, and when people talk about feedback, what are the consequences in their mind and body? We're going to talk about a new hope of collaboration into feedback. We're going to talk about the Empire Striking Back. Are you getting a theme? You will do what I tell you. Sometimes that's the feedback, isn't it? I am your father. And we're going to talk about the return of... it doesn't really work, does it? Return of the Jedi. No, return of collaborative feedback about joint learning, about awareness and why that's important. It's going to be about what people call feedback, or actually what they call conversation. We're going to talk about lots of stuff to do with feedback and collaborative feedback and why it is a thing at all. Chris, have I covered it?
I, for one, like your analogy. I think it does work. Well, at least you're trying really hard.
Yes, a new hope, I thought. Yes. Collaboration. Yeah, collaboration is a new hope. Do you know, I'm running a
program. In a galaxy far, far away.
In a galaxy very, very close, I'm going to be running a program in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be running two of them on collaboration. And I was asked specifically about this. How do we get our people to collaborate better? And I've written something for them, and I'm going to be running that. And it seems really important we talk about collaboration, but actually, and even if we have the structures set up to do it, we rarely, and which is not unusual, but we rarely actually ask each other, well, when we say collaboration, what do we mean? Mm. We just assume that we know what it is, and that it's the same as what's going on in the other brain opposite us. And regularly, like with most things, the image and impression that is resident in one mind is sometimes subtly and sometimes significantly different from the image and model that's resident in the mind opposite them.
Mm. I agree. And before we even get into the definition of collaboration and feedback and all this good stuff we're going to talk about today, I just want to say that collaboration is so important because it is so vital to any kind of innovation and freshness and creativity and newness, when minds meld together to explore something, to achieve something that they haven't previously achieved. Because we're all locked. You know, it doesn't matter how competent or how capable we are. We are locked inside our own mindsets, right? And when we're locked inside our own mindsets, the stuff that comes out is the stuff that normally kind of comes out. And then you collaborate, and when you do so, you have a chance of finding something new, something fresh, something different. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, so I love that. People believe themselves to be free, and nothing could be further from the truth. We are utterly conditioned and utterly enslaved to the patterns we have learned. We have learned some patterns, and we have learned to learn by our patterns, and we've learned to decipher. Our brains are merely computers that learn how to be by working in the world that they are emerged into. And so we are bound into a subset of thoughts that this is the limit of thoughts that we can think when left on our own. So collaboration is just phenomenal because thoughts that could never have actually originated in your mind have a chance to do so because they are now engaged with thoughts that were not generated by your mind. So, and once you understand that, Chris, and I think in working with you, this has been such a revelation.
Although I must say, there is an exception to the rule because sometimes, the voice is in my head. Are generating new stuff all the time.
You think it's new stuff. That's what your brain is telling you.
Good point. That's a fair point.
And it's not that our minds can't generate new stuff that it hasn't done before. But if we think about it, because it's our mind and because of our conditioning and because of all the things we know and because of we only generate from what we can know, there is a subset of things that exist that we can think about. What's interesting is when you add things that had no business being in your mind, when you connect with another human who thinks about things, especially if they think a little bit different, if they think a little bit differently than you normally would, the things that can come out of collaboration are things that genuinely neither of you could have thought of without the other. They just would not have occurred. Additionally, there are some things which you can think of which you wouldn't have been able to get the nuance of without the other. So they might have occurred to you, but something about them will resonate in a way that might not have occurred. Mm. And so you go from the stuff that couldn't exist, which now can exist, to the more subtle stuff. And now you're talking about things that can have an emphasis which you wouldn't have had if you were on your own, or a pattern or a sequence that you wouldn't have had if you were on your own because you think the way you think, you approach a topic in the way you approach it. But with another person there, even if they would do things, even if they have very similar conditioning, they might think in a different sequence than you would. And that sequence now changes something about the way you would think about a topic, and new thoughts or new types of thoughts or new characteristics of thoughts have an opportunity to exist, which just wouldn't have been on their path. And collaboration.
That's a great point, Yare. Yeah. I think of it almost like we have seeds.
Oh yeah.
And we can plant the seeds ourselves, or the seeds can come via a variety of ways, from reading what we watch on telly or see on social media.
Yes.
Or the seeds can even come from someone else. But until you have these conversations, these seeds aren't yet watered, and they cannot bloom, and they cannot fully form.
Yes.
And they cannot, and you do not see these ideas come to fruition.
Yes.
Until you start having these collaborative conversations. Is that right? Is that how you see it?
Dude, I got to tell you, there are some thoughts that you can't have unless you're talking with somebody. Unless you're talking to someone, unless you're prompted. There was a time you and I talked about conversations jousting with feathers. Do you remember, like, banter?
I do.
Banter is like jousting with feathers. You are in a little bit of... there's a bit of combat about it. There's a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. There's winning. There's a touche. There's a little bit of on guard. However... Yeah.
Of course, you're talking about friendly banter, right?
Because there is
the normal type of banter that people associate, which is not jousting with feathers; it's jousting with needles, isn't it?
With pointed sticks. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Right. But when it's banter, there's that jousting. But the jousting is wonderful because in that dance of jousting, you make moves that you wouldn't make on your own. You wouldn't, like you say. There's that. That to-ing and fro-ing, there are some things that come out of conversation that even if you sat in a room and thought about things on your own for a while, you may not get there. Songwriters have this down. I used to wonder, why do people get together to write a 3-minute poem? Does it need like three people, and sometimes you see the credits for songs, there's like six people on there. You think, why do you need six people? Because when they got together and they played around with these concepts and these feelings, something magical occurred. And then they win the award and they stand there and they go, I'm so grateful. It was so wonderful writing with them. And they're talking about an afternoon. And you think, what? Why is this so? But that collaboration, that working together, produced something that they completely recognize would not have existed without all of their minds.
Well, you see it in these US sitcoms that suddenly do really well. I remember Friends, and when you listen to the dialogue and the scripts in season one, possibly even season two, I'm not quite sure.
Yes.
I'm sure there are a lot of Friends out there who will rap my knuckles, you know, if I get this wrong, because people are so passionate about Friends, me being one of them. But in season one, the dialogue wasn't quite as sharp.
Yes.
And it wasn't quite as funny as some of the other series.
Yes.
Following it.
Yeah.
And the difference was, instead of two people, they started getting whole teams.
Yes.
Of scriptwriters coming in. And these guys, then they collaborated and they bounced all the best ideas and upped their game. And all of a sudden, it definitely grew in levels of funniness, Friends.
Yeah, and quality.
And quality.
Yes, yes. And if you can collaborate with the right people in the right way, then you really understand magic can happen. You know, you think about the Beatles, you think about rock bands in general. What a collaboration, right? Everybody playing their own thing, but they're not playing their own thing. They're really collaborating. The great jazz artists, Coltrane, the great orchestras, you know, they're collaborating, each adding their own part, but what comes out is movingly beautiful. You know, what's really interesting, Chris, is in the workplace, though, we don't think typically about collaboration in the same way. We don't take the time. An orchestra takes such time to learn to collaborate. Rock bands play for thousands of hours to learn. They say, you know, what's your sound? That makes sense to them. What's our sound? In the workplace, people don't.
I would agree. In my experience, it's almost like people assume I'm working, aren't I? Of course, I can collaborate.
I'm doing my bit.
I'm doing my bit, and of course, I'm talking to my colleagues. Therefore, I am collaborating, but that's not the kind of collaboration. Well, let me correct myself. It's not really the heart of the collaborations that we're talking about when you're talking about really producing, really focusing on artistry, really picking up your collaboration game.
Yeah.
And having that space of learning, right?
Yes.
Having that space of genuine learning.
Yes.
As opposed to compromising. So that's sometimes you see that. People call it collaboration, but really it's compromising sometimes.
You know, that is such a powerful point. Regularly, and even you can hear it in their language. They say, I'm going to be working with this person.
That's right.
And the reason is...
The all-encompassing sigh.
Oh, the all-encompassing sigh.
All-communicating sigh.
It just...
I love the sigh. Don't you just love the sigh?
It delivers.
I sigh all the time. My other half, the better part of me, she's forever saying, picking up on my sighs.
Yes.
What is that saying? What is that saying?
Yes.
It says everything.
It says,
I don't care what comes out of your
literally,
mouth.
Literally, it says
the
everything.
The sigh is what's real.
There are fewer words in any language that are as powerful as the all-encompassing sigh.
So, but we're not here just to talk about collaboration. We're here to talk about collaborative feedback. And of course,
indeed.
Well, why you might, I might hear you say, why are we talking about collaborative feedback? Well, one of the reasons is because I wrote a book on collaborative feedback called The Gift of Collaborative Feedback about, I think, 3 years ago now, something like that.
Yes.
It was born out of frustration, really, in seeing how people were avoiding and dreading feedback conversations in work organizations.
So, but why was it frustrating to you, though, Chris? Because in the work that you were doing, of course, you were trying to help teams come together and people. That's kind of the stuff that you've been doing and we've been doing. But why was it frustrating to you?
Because feedback is so essential in the workplace. It's the heart of everything. Even communication, there's a feedback loop. So when I say something, I don't know what you're hearing until we set up a feedback loop. And these feedback loops are so essential for performance. And it annoys me when people don't take performance seriously. If you're going to do something, do it well. That's what I yeah. kind of think.
See, one of the challenges that I have seen, and I'm thinking that you will have also noticed this, is that the setup is the problem. And so we assume that we're all right, and instead of setting up how we're going to work, we just jump in. So people don't ask, I mean, they don't really ask, what have you heard? They might ask, have you heard me? To which they might get an answer, yes, and then we can move on. But actually,
or they will say something like, I hear what you say.
Yeah, I hear what you say.
You no, heard something, and, right? And you heard something. I have no idea what I
very
what you
rarely,
think you heard.
Very rarely yeah. can you say, I hear what you say. I hear what I hear. And it's probably as accurate as you can be. I hear what I hear. Because you're never actually hearing anything anyway. Your brain is just interpreting it. And I'm talking about meaning. So somebody will say something, and you know, your brain will take that in and tell you that it means a certain thing. And you'll go with that because your brain does everything. But regularly, people don't check to see if what they said is actually what people heard. And people don't generally check to see if what they're hearing is what was intended for their brain to have. And it's not in the setup. It's not. So when you say feedback loops, and this is for the audience, feedback loop sounds technical, but really all it is setting up a to and fro, and the and fro is important. It's not just a to, it should be a to and fro, a back and forth, rather than just let me tell you something. It should be almost always let's discuss something, because I have to check to see if you've got what I was saying. Not if you heard something, but if you heard the thing I was intending that you hear and what I think it should mean.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah.
Whenever you have any kind of goal or outcome, you want to know that what you do or what you say is contributing to that goal. And so there needs to be some checking process. Otherwise, yeah. what happens is you do things or you say things that take you further away from your goal, either in a conversation or behaviors or via project or by projects. So you need feedback loops. It's absolutely essential. And I think people don't, half the time, don't even realize that they're engaging in feedback conversations, because most people, I think, in organizations think of, oh, I'm going to give you some feedback, as in behavioral feedback.
Yep.
But I'm very passionate about conversational feedback. Of course, behavioral feedback is an issue, and sometimes behavior needs to be addressed and talked about, because we can't understand why these behaviors are going on and whether they're contributing to the bigger or desired goal.
Yeah.
But I think on an everyday basis, because we really don't want to be addressing people's behavior every single day. It would get very tedious and very discouraging for people.
But some people do, and they wonder why around them is tedium and discouragement.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But what's really essential is conversational feedback.
Yeah.
Feedback where you are talking about ideas, you're talking about each other's thinking, how you hold things. I call them mental models of, you know, people have whole different mental models of things.
Yeah.
And basically what I'm talking about is what that thing means and how that thing works. And we all have different viewpoints. So, for instance, take accountability.
Oh, man.
You know,
we do you remember that meeting? Do you remember the meeting?
I remember a meeting. We had a meeting a while back where we asked members of a leadership team, what is accountability? And the answers were very, very different. Even what is accountability?
Yeah.
And how does it work? Was yeah. even more different, right?
Yeah, I loved two answers in particular. They, even now, they tickle me. And I use this example a lot, but it's beautiful because two very important people in that team, and the team had two sides to it, and it necessarily had people from two different parts of the organization. And one of them said that accountability was essential and pivotal. And because it was essential and pivotal, they include it in every conversation. And the other person said accountability was toxic and detrimental. And so they try to never talk about accountability. And these are people who work together on projects. And it was just phenomenal. Because nobody ever asked either one, what do you think about accountability? And by the way, neither, even in that conversation, neither had defined what accountability was.
And we just assume, right? I mean, yes. These are everyday words, business words, if you like, business jargon, that we assume that people have the same interpretations of these words. And I'm not even talking about jargon or abbreviations that are particular to a firm, company,
no,
or business.
No.
I'm just talking about everyday language.
Just words.
Words like accountability, words like trust, words like change. These words that we use on an every... Productivity.
Oh, my goodness.
Productivity.
Work.
Performance.
Performance. Oh, my goodness.
These things.
Yes.
Now, people hold different models.
So, Chris, can I throw out a disclaimer? Or a framing, and you don't have to agree with me. Let me throw it at you. You tell me what you think of this. When we talk about these conversations, and we are talking, this is the Joy of Work podcast, so we are talking about conversations in the workplace where being productive and then having a value and being associated with achieving something is quite important. In normal everyday conversation, just as we've been talking today, we've not been typically stopping and saying, what did you hear? I think I hear what you're saying. Let me play back to you. Part of that, we do some of that. And some of that is because we've had these conversations so much that we are very in tune in terms of you and I. So we are kind of playing back some of the things we've talked about many times. So that's part of it. But what we're talking about here is in the work, we are in work, we really are attempting to be conversationalists, and we should be trying to be professional conversationalists, trying to have conversations of significant importance that get us to the place we want to get to. So that checking in, that making some assessment of meaning, if it's high priority, then it will really affect conversations and make them really useful and mean that you don't have to have them 12 times on the same topic. You might actually make progress. But in more casual environments, the attitude to some of this stuff, you may not need to be as... You may not need to be as prescriptive as we're describing. But there is a real requirement to have at least an element of prescription in the workplace. Is that a reasonable frame? What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree because, and it's going back to what you were saying about professional conversationalists because, and I think we've talked about it elsewhere in our podcast, and it's about we're not having conversations down in a pub.
Mm.
As people who are there doing a job in the workplace, we have limited time.
Mm.
Often we are compelled to communicate within groups, which complicates things hugely.
Mm.
And we have outcomes because usually our conversations mean something that lead to something being done that leads to, it could be huge swathes of work that take place because of a conversation, especially if you and I are senior in an organisation.
Yeah.
What we say then can result in whole tranches of work being started, if you like. And there's, it requires a discipline because we only have a couple of hours, sometimes not even that, an hour and a half. And sometimes these conversations are really complicated conversations. Mm. They are complex conversations dealing with lots of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And unless we have a discipline to as to how to have these kind of conversations, the chances of us doing it well are often slim.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why some companies, they absolutely see the need and they understand the value of facilitation because they recognize that without facilitation, you would simply not get these conversations done in the timescales that you want them done by in order to make decisions that you need to make.
Yep. It's like having a moderator on a panel conversation. Sometimes you wonder, why do they have a moderator? It's to make sure that things get done. And just leaving it to a natural conversation won't do that. It won't do that. It requires some intention. And we're back at the stuff we've been talking about. It requires some intention. Is that fair to say?
I think it is fair to say. So, yeah, all right. Collaborative feedback. So we're talking about collaborative feedback and... What is collaborative feedback was one of the things that we said we were going to talk about.
So where do you want to go first then? Do you want to go collaborative or do you want to talk about what is feedback?
I thought we had been talking about collaborative for quite a while.
Well, we have. There is much more that can be said. People would be surprised to know. But shall we kind of talk about the basic thing called feedback and let's play that out a little bit. What do you think?
Yes, let's talk about feedback. I know to some extent we already have been talking a little bit about feedback.
Indeed.
But we've noticed in the work that we do, right, everyone we talk to in any business or company, when we talk to them about feedback, invariably you will hear a comment, oh yes, we need this. We need to improve the quality of our feedback. Or more specifically, our managers need to improve the quality of their feedback, or our leaders need to improve the quality of their feedback.
Yeah. And by the way, the leaders regularly say that themselves. The people underneath say the leaders need to be better at delivering feedback, and the leaders themselves feel that their ability to be effective at delivering feedback needs to improve. And it's a beautiful thing when people in positions of responsibility recognize that there is a space for real growth in an area of real importance. It's not always the case that they do, but when they do, that's a special and beautiful thing. Because awareness of a space for growth is the first step along actually filling it, right? And actually doing some growing. You've got to think that might be a good thing to do. You're right. Yeah, they regularly say that's a gap for us. It's so common, though.
It is so common. And because of this, can I say fear of feedback sometimes and the fear of the concept? Because most people hold it in a way that doesn't often help them because they think of it as some kind of judgment or criticism a lot of the time.
Yes.
And as a result, then they hold back from giving it as much as they need to. In fact, we need to give feedback because otherwise how can we be high performing if we don't have feedback? Every system that is high performing has got feedback built into it.
Yes.
Whether it's a sporting team, whether it's a rock band, a jazz band.
Yes.
Any team endeavour requires feedback and copious amounts of it.
Yes.
Especially if you want to be high performing. Yeah. But if we hold it as criticism, then we tend to hold back on giving feedback because we are not sure how it will be taken. And as a result, I mean, I know myself, there have been lots of occasions where I've known I needed to give feedback, but it just feels really difficult. And I end up not giving it. It's just easier not to, right?
It's just easier not to. And boy, do we love ease.
Yes. I think it's a human condition. Ease. Ease is a human condition.
Boy, do we love ease. And so it is easier not to. But then there are a lot of people who say, well, rip the plaster off. And so they go, I'm just going to give it. You know what? You were rubbish. Deal with it. And they... And they go and
yeah, good luck. Good luck with that one.
and then
there's a philosophy, isn't there? I'm just go for it. Just
do it.
Just go for it. Just do it. Just do it. It's all gonna be okay. Oh
no.
Oh, oh.
No, it's not gonna be okay.
We have seen so many people who are not okay.
Yeah, well,
we've seen so many people lose their jobs eventually. Yeah, and
people
hasn't been okay.
People choose to leave. You know, I'm coaching somebody at the minute who is in a space where they've received feedback like that significantly enough for them to think, well, let me see if there are other places where that sort of feedback might be less. And it's not hard to see where the dung sandwich then comes from.
Because... What you mean, the say something nice, say what you really think. And then say something nice again to massage. But actually, you know, to be fair, that does work sometimes. I've seen plenty of occasions where that does work and it somehow makes it easier for people. But then there's a whole group of people who that doesn't work for as well.
Yeah, right? I'm like you. I think it can be a way for people to do things. And when we say work, I think it's possible for it to work for the speaker. But for the person who is hearing it, it has the potential to be confusing. So the next time they hear something that is even vaguely positive, they might ask the question, oh, I wonder if there's some negative so-called truth about to appear. Or they hear something that's vaguely positive and they wonder, was there some negative truth that I was supposed to hear before this that I can't remember? Because, you know, we're creatures of habit and we look for patterns. You know, you give a bunch of flowers to somebody that you are in an amorous relationship with and they respond to you by saying, what do you want? Why? Yeah. Because, yeah. Or what have you done?
Yeah, and I think the deeper thing with that is it breaks the trust a little bit, right? Because you somehow, on some levels, you can sometimes feel manipulated. And whenever you feel manipulated, it breaks the bonds of trust a little bit more. And it makes that conversation next time just that tiny little bit harder.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, because like you said, it breaks the bonds of trust. And so when you want to genuinely, exclusively deliver something like praise or some comment of encouragement, somebody might sidestep it waiting for this negativity, which they're not associating with truth. They're just associating with how they felt when you did it the last time. Mm. And they may wait for multiple conversations. So they might believe that you were being positive 6 or 7 conversations from now. And if you were to deliver some challenge, they'll go, I know what you're doing. That's why you were buttering me up 3 weeks ago when you said that nice thing. It was just so that you could say this nasty thing now. And you think, well, why? Yeah, because we might have taught them to see when they hear us say something with positivity that it will be chased by something that we call feedback. And we'll call it constructive feedback. Just
yes, this is meant to construct something more positive.
Oh my goodness me!
But it is inevitably perceived as destructive feedback or critical feedback, right, by some.
Yeah.
And there's another thing that occurs when the dung sandwich, as you call it, something else occurs, because it's what does it evoke? Because we talk about this evocation.
Yes.
What's evoked in the language that we use and the concepts we share about. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what's evoked from it. And often, it's even if you're packaging something and it's in the middle, as soon as you package it, then actually the thing that's in the middle is no longer what you want to explore, almost, if you like. Because we need people to explore the feedback we give. Otherwise, how do they really adjust? If it's a behavioural change, or if it's conversational, if it's changing their thinking,
yeah.
We need people to actually really explore it and learn from it and process it. Whereas when you give feedback in that kind of a setup, it sends a signal of, here's a warning to you, almost, if you like.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, when you get a warning, people get defensive, and it's not necessarily a learning space, it's a defensive space. Yeah. Unless, of course, you've developed the habits of whenever, you know, you get signals like that to open up and explore, but actually quite a lot of people have not yet developed those skills yet, right?
And it's counterintuitive to do so. You become a weird person if you did, right? You become the outlier. And I say a weird person only because...
Over enthusiastic.
Yes, people will call you that,
You suck at your job. Wow, sucking's a really interesting word. Can we talk a little bit more about that? I love the fact that you're giving me input and feedback. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Very weird. Very weird, please. Very weird. So we were in a session not too long ago, and I asked these questions, and it was really interesting to see people's responses. So we asked, what do you feel like when you have somebody knock on your door and then say, tap, 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 can we talk? What were the initial feelings? And then we said, what do you feel when somebody says, can we have a word? Ooh, that one didn't go down well at all. And then we said, when somebody knocks on your door and says, I'd like to talk to you about something. Ooh. It just what they said was, there were real feelings of trepidation. What have I done? What's going on? Is my job safe? All of those things came up just from, and the person might have wanted to praise them, but that framing for feedback. So then I asked them, what if somebody did the same knocking and said, I've got something I'd like to discuss with you. Do you have a minute? Or have you got a minute? I'd like to run something by you. And the difference in what, and to use your word, Chris, what it evoked in them was so significant. It was huge. And it utterly affected how they brought themselves to the conversation they were going to have. And we hadn't even talked about the content of the conversation, but it totally changed the way they would approach the actual conversation they were going to have. Do you remember that session?
I do. And even at home sometimes, the missus and I, we have a conversation, and if I say or she says something like, can we talk?
Yeah, oh,
immediately.
Man.
The sigh then comes out. I get an internal. Okay. Prepare oneself for what's coming.
Yeah, listen, Chris, you're doing well because yours is in the daytime. Listen, what you really don't want is you're asleep. You're having a relatively good dream. And then you feel a tapping. And you wake up, it's still night. And the person next to you says, we need to talk. The feelings of trepidation intensify. But those framings of the conversation are indicative of how we see this idea of feedback, of this exchange. I have something to talk about with somebody, or I have something that I want to say with somebody. How do I frame to have this conversation? And we decide how it's going to be. And it's learned. So there are some other ways of doing it. It's not collaborative, typically.
No. And I think there's a distinction. You can, at a very basic level, make a distinction between, let's call it constructive. Some people call it positive. Some people call it negative feedback. Yeah. Some people call it constructive feedback and positive feedback. But even with positive feedback, and the intention of positive feedback is to encourage someone, or as you use the word, praise someone. I have issues with that, by the way, when you praise someone at work, because there are power connotations addressed to that. When you praise someone, there's a subtle message of a power game going on there. Maybe it's just me, but because can you imagine praising your boss for the good job he's done?
Yeah,
it just doesn't happen. So it works in one direction almost, if you like.
Yeah, and also when you praise somebody for doing the job they were required to do, it doesn't make it easy for them to absorb anything different.
No,
because without some conversation as to what the origins are of that thinking, why it was deemed important to share it, all of that sort of stuff, without exploring some of that, it's hard for somebody to go, well, when I look at my work requirements, the requirements of my job, it says I should do the thing that you've just said that you're calling out. You know, soldiers, you know, you saved the life of your comrade. Well, we've done 6 years of training that was specifically for me to be able to save the life of my comrade. So I don't understand why you are making a big fuss of it. This was my training. This is everything I was supposed to do. Had I not done it, I should be in jail.
That's right. And linked with that, though, on that very theme, if you like, it amazes me, because feedback is such an intrinsic part of work in whatever role you're in. Mm. Because we need to feedback to the people above us, to the side of us, below us. It doesn't matter where we sit in an organisation as regards to hierarchy, but we need to be feeding back if the system is to be working well.
Yeah.
And to me, it's paramount that actually when you give the feedback, you are skilled enough to give it in a way that evokes the right types of conversations, and that takes skill.
Yep.
And yet with feedback, it's just assumed people know how to give feedback. You might have a small section of it on a course where it's like, well, here's a feedback model you can use. Here's a dung sandwich. Try this, try that. Yes. As if that's the skill. If you just implement and execute the model, that's the skill.
No.
Whereas we know, actually, it's really important.
Yeah.
What we evoke in others, because sometimes you can get your own way and people will comply, but you lose the connection, and sometimes it may even end up in a grievance against you.
Wow.
Words that are important because they do hurt.
Yeah.
And actually, more and more, as you and I know these days, with lots of the sensitive issues going around with equality, diversity, and inclusion, that these things can be incredibly messy.
Yes. Yes.
And therefore, the skill of feedback. It
yes.
requires a real training and a real focus.
Yes.
In order that when you present yourself and you're delivering the feedback, that it just flows naturally.
Yes.
And you're evoking the right thing. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, Chris. And I think what you've done here is you've brought us full circle to back to collaboration. Mm. Because if... And let's just think about this for just a moment. We've talked about feedback. So and when we say feedback, really what we're talking about is something happened, or you have some idea, or some event went on, or you're thinking something, and it occurs to you that either there's a better way, or what happened is really good and you would like to encourage that whatever they're doing, they keep doing it. So either you think there should be some course correction, or you think some keep going encouragement might be useful, and then you want to share it. Well, actually,
I would say even more than just to keep going, because you're right. I think there is a keep going, but I think there's an opportunity not just for keep going,
yeah.
but even with positive feedback, there's a space for get even better.
Get even better. Yeah, so you're on the right track.
So in
get
a sense, it is
better.
Course
yes.
correction.
Yes.
But it's get even better.
Yes. Yeah. There's an opportunity.
Keep going, get even better.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it seems from your perspective that everything you want to do is good, right? Without there being a conversation, that thing that you want to do could be seen in any number of ways, because you'd only communicate it the way you know how. But the way it's received is about how their brain does that. So without a conversation, we talked about this when you and I just talked about collaboration, without that collaboration piece in the middle, it almost doesn't matter how you say it or even what you say. Without a conversation, you can't be sure that the outcome will be the one you want. So there's a real requirement for that conversation. And it's not for a conversation that you direct. It's actually for a conversation to exist and the quality of that conversation. So, yeah, and you've already talked about learning and in that. That conversation, that two-way, that feedback loop that you mentioned earlier on, Chris, that's the bit that is so easily and regularly missed. It's missed. There's the delivery. Then there's an assumption that it will be absorbed.
That will be, yes, that's right. Somehow it will magically find its way into the neurology of the person.
Yes.
And they will miraculously change.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Now, that might be the case. That might be.
It might happen. Of course it might be. We're hoping that people hear this and that it somehow tickles them in some way. Of course it might happen. But you don't want... Hope is not the strategy you want to be applying in the workplace. You've got decisions that might affect people. You want to have more assuredness than mere hope. You'd like to have... be closer to certainty. And it's possible. That conversation, that collaborative conversation, can really help you to get closer than hope and get you to a real close certainty of what will happen next, which is quite a big thing. It's quite a big thing.
Yes. So going back to our definition of what is collaborative feedback.
Yeah.
For me, collaborative feedback is a system of feedback where it's delivered in such a way as to evoke, and I'm going to use that word again, evoke a learning space for all parties involved, because that's what collaboration is. It's not just a you learn off me. So if we're collaborating together, it'd be like, oh, let's collaborate together on this YARA, but you know what? You need to learn off me. It's a two-way thing. You learn off me, I learn off you. And so it's a joint learning space, and that's the essential bit.
Yeah.
You create a joint learning space by the way you deliver that feedback. And there's a real art and there's a real skill to do that, because some people are fantastic at creating environments. We know people, right, who when you're around them, you want to talk. And it's great talking to them. Yeah. And you want to talk, and you find yourself talking.
Yeah.
Then there are other people who evoke shut up in you, right? And it's not like they're saying shut up. It's you don't want to say anything, even though they're trying really hard to engage you. You're like, I won't be engaged because the environment is not engaging,
this
right? This isn't engaging. And that's what collaborative feedback is. It's a system of feedback that increases the chances of you engaging exploratory, co-creation, learning spaces in order for you to take things to the next level, I guess.
Yeah, and actually, in order for you to have the conversation, and I think, and this really struck me, that if you can limit your intention to having the conversation, you have a better chance of the conversation being useful and valuable. But if you are committed to a particular outcome, then you guide the conversation in a way that it may not have, it may not have gone. And so there's kind of a requirement to focus in on what you've just said, building a platform so that people can feel really good about contributing into and working with you, collaborating with you, and that from that conversation then something may happen. But you've got to just focus in on the conversation. So instead of saying, I think they should change because if they change they'll be better, it's, I think they should change. We should discuss the fact that I think they should change. I wonder if what I'm thinking is actually real. I can't know unless we talk. Let's yes. talk and see. Because if we talk, maybe we'll see. Maybe that'll be the outcome. I don't have to give up on that idea, but I have to step back from making it my whole desire. I should be saying, well, let's talk. Who knows where it will lead? I have an idea, but I'm not so wedded to it that I'm making that the way. An other way may occur. And my idea might be right. So, well, let's see. But most importantly, let's talk and see what happens. And let's even That's talk right. about my idea. Let's see.
That's right. And it's a conversational approach to feedback. Our aim is to make feedback just very normal. It's like a conversation, an exploratory conversation. And actually, that's incredibly encouraging and uplifting.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's to make it into a normal conversation about our meaning, our sense-making of the world. So then we can then individually or jointly even assess, do we need to adjust in any way? Do we need to keep going? Do we need to take things higher? It's so important that we get this right in our work cultures.
All right, Chris, if I was listening to this, I would be like, so what's this? What's the process then? That's where I'd be. What's going on? What's the process? What's so different? So if you were going to say to people, there's an approach they should take, how would you sum it up, Chris? How would you... Because we've talked about collaborative feedback. We've talked about what feedback is. We've talked about what collaboration is. We talked about how important learning is into the process and awareness of what's being elicited. These are all that we've expanded on them. If they were going to start to try and apply any of this, what should they do? What would be good fun to play with? What would you say to people?
Well, I think one of the first things is... And clearly there's a model, but that's not the conversation we're going to get into
no,
today.
No.
But I would say, number one, the intention is to create a learning space. And if you hold that as an intention and that's what you're trying to create, that's a good starting point.
Mm.
And everything that comes with that. And of course, if your intention is to create a joint learning space, you would change the patterns of, you know, of your language, I guess, so that the words evoke what you want to be evoked, and also the tones. And I think also in organizations, people sometimes aren't aware of the power structures that sit beneath the surface, and they're communicated in little tones
yes.
and things like that are very subtle, that no one really picks up consciously, but that control things to a large degree.
Yes.
But it's very hard to have a joint learning environment if this level of power and control is being exerted, if you like, in that space. So I think that's the first thing, is to have an intention of creating a learning space.
Yes.
And another thing I think is really, really important is suspend assumptions and judgments. Of course, we will always have judgments.
That's so
and assumptions.
Hard, Chris. It's so hard.
It is.
Yeah.
It is really tricky. But it's partly the learning, creating a learning space. If you want yourself to be in a joint learning space, it's about curiosity. It's about suspending of judgment. And it's not that you need to drop what you think about things, absolutely not. But you can temporarily question what you think about things in order to get to another space. And I think that's really, really important in terms of collaboration as well.
Yeah. Can I say something about that, Chris?
Of course.
Just one piece about that. I find that people are so wedded to being right that they find it difficult to risk being wrong. Because being right pays off so well. Being right gives back. When you're right, it gives back. You feel good. You feel so good.
And of course you're right.
Of course you're right. And so they don't always allow themselves to discuss. And they say, and they'll start things like, you'll never change my mind. I believe this because it's a fact. And you must do it because. And what you're saying, it kind of flies in the face of that. Well, what it seems what you're saying here is, you're not saying you have to give up being right. But you just have to be open to being right being not the only thing. And there might be other rights as well that you can't see. And if you can't see them, that might be okay that you can't see them. Because who knows, your eyes may be open to them.
And that's a nice way of putting it. That's a really nice way of putting it, yes.
Yep.
And the world is so much more interesting that way. And how on earth are we going to really fully utilize the diversity that we have in all the human beings who work out there in these organizations unless we start adopting some of these principles of other perspectives? There are other perspectives that might even be more valid or just as valid. And seeing things. And of course, it complicates things a little bit. But it makes the world so much more interesting and there's so much more possibility.
Yeah, I agree. I'm reminded of the very first time I went to Dubai. And I've been to Dubai many times. But I'm reminded of the very first time I went to Dubai. And when I went to Dubai, I stood in a place and I was talking to somebody who was there. And he told me, you know, where we are used to be the sea. And I was like, what? I said, yeah, this used to be the sea. What that meant was somebody stood on the land and said, let's build a city over there. And somebody else said, but that's the sea. And he said, I know. And just...
I see. Oh, okay.
Chris.
Dad joke. I apologize.
Legendary timing.
I apologize.
Legendary timing.
No, I don't apologize for my dad jokes. I like dad jokes.
I'm a fan of dad jokes. But, it is okay to not see everything and to have somebody say something to you which you don't understand or you can't conceive. But, you know, after some conversations, they built an island that looks like a palm tree and is miles out into the sea. And then they built one of the world's largest hotels at the very end of it. And it exists and it's wonderful and it's excellent. And somebody had to think of that and have a conversation about it. And the other people had never thought of it until that moment.
That's right.
And in that moment, they learned that they can see things that could not ever be seen on their own. There was real collaboration. I'm not talking about how things go politically in the UAE or religion or any of that. I'm just talking about human beings talking with other human beings and doing what you describe, suspending their judgment for a moment. Just saying, I'm not going to decide what's good, bad, can't be, can be. I'm just going to allow the conversation to happen. Just for a minute. And Dubai exists. So does every tower. So did people putting their feet on the moon. Or even going to space. Or even flying. Or even, Stevenson's rocket. Or riding a horse. Or writing on a wall, or fire. All of those things that didn't exist at one time. Somebody thought something that somebody else thought couldn't possibly be, or had never existed. And the more we can do that, the more we can, like, and what you said, I think is so pivotal. Just for a moment, suspend the judgment and let the conversation happen. They just turned on the Hadron Collider again because they want to really discover dark matter this time. They've done the Higgs boson. Now they're going after dark matter, which is supposedly what the universe is the majority of what the universe is made of. I mean, somebody had to have that idea, and it was not in everyone else's mind.
No.
It's so pivotal. What you just said is so pivotal. That idea of suspending, not throwing away, just pressing pause on your judgment for a moment. It's crazy.
Well, it's been fun talking about collaboration and introducing people to the concept of collaborative feedback.
So I gotta say, the thing which tickles me, what really tickles me, and you know, I have no idea. I'm sure you know where I'm going with this, but it tickles me. You've already written about this. You've already written about this. People can go and explore this, and they can go and get into this themselves and get into the basics and really gradually get a sense of it, a feel of it. They can read the book. Now, Chris, throw it at them. Where can they get your book, The Gift? And it is a gift. I love the title of it, The Gift of Collaborative Feedback. How can they engage with that? How can they get hold of it? Where do they go?
Well, it's on Amazon. Everyone uses Amazon. You can get it from amazon.com, amazon.co.uk.
Yeah.
Read it. I think you'll find it a useful and enlightening read.
I think so too. I think having been privy to it and having read it myself, I think so too. The Gift of Collaborative Feedback, collaboration, feedback, feedback loops. Seriously, there is stuff there that is necessary because we're already doing it. Oh my goodness. That's been the Professional Conversationalist Podcast. The space where we explore the wonder, humor, and craziness in conversations and situations in that rarefied atmosphere that we call the workplace. Listen, if you have any thoughts on this stuff, connect with us. We'd love to speak to you. Come back to us. Let's know what your thoughts are. And we're looking forward to speaking to you again on the next one on the Professional Conversationalist Podcast. So, Chris, that was good. It was good talking to you, man. It was good.
See you soon.